Today I'm at the headquarters of X.AI, a startup in New York City. I'm joined by Dennis Mortensen, the CEO and founder.
Good to be here.
Dennis, can you tell me a little bit about your background, please?
So we've been in the data analytics modeling space for the last decade and a half, sadly, because we're getting a little bit older. But we started out in the mid-90s doing what you might just describe as analytics consulting. So concepts like page views, sessions, unique visitors, campaign attribution, seems like concepts that come free of charge. But they only come free of charge because you have an application that does that for you. So we spent really almost 5 years stitching together log files through SQL into analytics stories. And we're so fortunate to have a good exit in April 2000. And then after that, I lived in England for a while and moved to Budapest, where we did a web analytics tool and technology company, which did this not by hand, but through technology. So very much like Omniture, Core Metrics, Web Trends. And it was called Index Tools, which was a company that ended up being acquired by Yahoo, which is how I ended up over here in the US. In the past 4 years, we've done a predictive analytics venture for media, which worked on this idea of trying to predict which stories that, say, CNN or ABC or Fox should carry on their homepage. And with that extremely well, actually so well, that also got acquired last year in March. And now we're a good half year into our next venture, which is this AI machine that tries to schedule a meeting on behalf of the host without adding any human layers to it.
So this is X.AI?
That is X.AI, yes.
Can you go into a little more detail on what X.AI is?
Certainly. I think our offering is extremely simple, but the solution is extremely hard. And for any entrepreneur, that is exactly the space you want to be in. You don't want to spend half an hour trying to explain to people what you do, and then once they figure it out, it's a solution they can go do themselves on whatever applications they have at home. So I want something where I tell you, when you ask me, what do? I schedule meetings, and you're not in doubt. Oh, okay. So at your desktop, did you hire 400 people in the Philippines? That doesn't really matter. The offering is the same. I schedule meetings. Obviously, if I had 400 people in the Philippines, my whole business model would be difficult, hard, and not really set up for scale. But I'm still in the business of scheduling meetings. The approach we've taken, though, is not one of trying to be yet another outsourcing company. It's one where we believe perhaps there's a moment in time now where you can do something that used to be done by humans by machines. And we're now a good 6 months into that endeavor of trying to figure out how can we hold this human-like dialogue between a machine-driven personal assistant and a number of guests. And the way that works when I say I schedule meetings is really just one of us giving access to the hosts to this machine-driven personal assistant, which they'll use to schedule their meetings. But they will simply just ask Amy, as we call her, to do the job. And then the kind of technical party starts of trying to figure out exactly what did you ask? How do I deal with that? How do I speak to your guests? How do I deal with their responses? But I still come back to this point where when my mom asks, so what are you doing this time? I schedule meetings and she immediately gets it. So that's what I do.
Can you give an example of how it works?
We have, and I might just be a little bit too elaborate here, but I think it's interesting to kind of talk about. So if you're my age, and probably your age as well, there's a memory of having received a CD at some point in the mid-90s with, say, Photoshop on it. And I ran home, installed it on my desktop, and played with it for weeks, if not months. But it was an application which I installed on a desktop in my room, and there it sat. I think that was at least that first paradigm for how you use software. The next paradigm might have been, if we believe folks like Salesforce, one of, you don't really need to install this on your desktop. You might just be able to run this in the cloud. And there is no such concept as software which we install on desktops anymore. There's just software which we get access to, software as a service. And mm-hmm. now it just seems so obvious, but it was certainly not obvious back then.
Well, the technology wasn't there for it anyway.
It just wasn't there. We didn't even have the bandwidth to think about this. And then I think perhaps after that, there could have been a transition to this whole idea of, and we might have a laugh about it today, but there's now an app for that. That used to be a marketing campaign. Now it might be a punchline, but there's still certainly the idea of there is an app for that. And I still believe there's value in that. And I think a lot of the functions that I could do in the cloud, I don't need to because I'm on the go. So that map doesn't provide much value when I'm walking the streets of Paris. I need it now. I don't need access to a web client so I can go look up a map. I need to look at it when I'm at the museum or wherever. So those are certainly kind of the past that we're coming from. But I do think there could be this moment in time where there's a next step, which is this, and I don't yet have the name for it, or I certainly don't think the industry have a name for it, but let's call it invisible software. Software that doesn't really exist as a web client, as a piece of software installed on a desktop, or as an app. It just exists in the way you use it. And that brings me back to your question. So how the hell does this work? Amy, really only exists in dialogue. There is no client. There is no plugin. There is no extension. There is no app. There is no website here. There's just you who at some point receive an email from your friend asking, hey, I got this new idea. Do you got time to meet up for coffee? Not next week, but the week after, preferably on Thursday. Your only response to that should be, sure, I'm up for that. I've CC'd in Amy. She'll help find some time on my calendar. Looking forward to it. Send, archive, and you think nothing of it until you receive the invite. And that sounds almost too good to be true. But that is the interface. The interface is a CC. It's an email. It's a protocol that already exists. But it also means that once you archive that email, she disappears. Where is she? She's out working for you. She's actually no different than any other assistant that you send out the office and say, hey, go hunt down this person and find a time for us to meet up at these locations which I like with the time duration that I'm fond of. And once you figure that out, come back and let me know. And that is the interface. And that's how she works. And that is really simple, but almost so simple that sometimes I have to explain it because don't I install anything here?
But no, I configure something.
Yes.
I've had that problem using it, that I was expecting I needed to configure a thing and found out I just had to send an email to Amy saying, please set up this second email account to associate with my first email account. And that was it. I didn't get a confirmation. It just worked from there on.
I've had this vision, and I might just change my ways a little bit along the way, but currently I'm trying to do a setup where if I cannot go out to the front office and say the exact same things to a human, it is not good enough for my application. So you would never go out to a office manager or a personal assistant and say, hey, can I see your control panel? Heck, you get punched in the face if you said that.
You might get into trouble, all right?
So if I can't say that to her, I shouldn't do that. So that's kind of my threshold for should I build this or not? Do you have a slider for when I can have meetings booked? Who the hell do you think you are? So I want something where if I cannot say that to a human being, I don't want that as an interface. So I want you to really think of her as something being very human. And again, we're still only a good 6-7 months into it, right? But I think that could be a not just winning solution for us, but for many applications as we move forward. I don't want to sit here for half an hour trying to set up the GPS in my car. I just want to say, we're heading to Toys R Us. Please get me there.
But to go back a tiny bit, once I've CC'd Amy saying, with an email to Tom saying, let's meet for dinner, Amy will then continue emailing Tom, arranging times, telling Tom I'm available at this time or that time,
yeah,
and so on. So there will be a dialogue between the Amy and the person that
yes,
I'm attempting to.
Which is a very good point here. There's certainly two parties to this. There's the host, which Amy works for, and there's the guest, which is the friend, colleague, partner to the host. And once you asked Amy to help set up this meeting, Amy starts that job of very kindly sending out an email to the guest of, would you be available come the week after next on Thursday at 1 to meet up with your friend? If not that, perhaps at 3 o'clock. And if not that, perhaps the day after. Let me know. Then she sits back. She waits. If she gets no response, she will then wake up again and say, I didn't hear from you. Sorry to bother you. Did that Thursday work out for you? If not, I'll be very happy to suggest a new set of times, which is available. And typically, if not on that kind of first reminder, she'll push again because she's a machine. She's going to be as happy, as enthusiastic on the second reminder. Really sorry to bother you, but I'm trying to lock in this time for your friend. Would you be available that Thursday? And then as the guest comes back and say, oh, yes, sorry, I've been maxed out. I can do the Thursday, but can we do it half an hour later? She'll then respond almost immediately after saying, half an hour later is good, but I might need to cut the meeting a little bit short because she's got a 3 o'clock. The guest will say, sure, I'm up for that. She'll say, thank you very much, appreciate it. You should receive an invite shortly. Then an invite goes out to the host and to the guest. And the only thing the host will see in this is that initial request where he said, Amy, work it for me. He didn't do all that back and forth and had to kind of memorize, do I follow up with him now or tomorrow? Did he say yes or no? Did I promise somebody else something? Perhaps I did. They might overlap. Ah, that's not going to, you know, pan out. She does all of that tedious back and forth, and all the host sees is that email at the very end where, oh, we are meeting up. There's an invite. You just need to click yes.
So Amy is plugged into your calendar at all times.
Yes. So for her, and that's, again, a very good point, for her to have full visibility into who are you, when are you free, when are you not, when do you like to meet up, when don't you like to meet up, we need visibility into that calendar. And the first thing we do is ask for access to your calendar so we can see your free and busy time. And we then actually go train on your calendar. So if you don't do any meetings before 10 o'clock, me suggesting something at 8 a.m. is just not a good call. Or like me, if you do meetings on the weekends, but it seems to be mostly with new potential engineers, oh, okay, then don't set up a vendor chat on a Saturday, but do set up a potential engineer on a Saturday if he can't meet any other day. You exhausted all other options. Okay, certainly, I'm up for that. So you do connect that calendar.
And Amy is capable of learning those nuances?
So what we do today, what we want her to do is obviously become a little bit smarter for every interaction you have with her. And that is certainly happening today. On the calendar preferences, we start out with a initial set of best practices that we learned from the network. Then we tune those best practices from what we can see in your calendar. And then as we book one meeting, a little bit off, because we might have thought we knew you, but we didn't really just yet. And you say, Friday night, 8 p.m., Amy, get out of here. Fair enough. Then we tune it a little bit. 7 p.m. it is. My apologies. And we'd be happy to reschedule this, by the way. And this is a fun notion, right? Where there's two parts to this. I have one part where, say, next week, I have 17 meetings. New employees, investors, one-on-ones, team meetings, all hands, all of that good stuff that comes with running a startup. But I invested in it, right? So if I go back 4 years, I invested in a week like that. So sometimes I wouldn't change my schedule, even if it would have been more optimal had I kind of reshuffled it a little bit. But I invested so much energy into it that I simply can't fathom the time, the energy to go change it. So I'm just going to do it. With Amy, we've seen people to slowly start doing that kind of set of Hollywood tricks, right? You see the guy, he's out driving, or he's staying, you know, one extra day in San Francisco. They'll send one email saying, Amy, I got to stay one day extra in San Francisco. Could you move my meetings today to next week? How wonderful is that? Mm. You've got five things. There's not eight people which you need to arrange with and things that go wrong. Just one very casual email to Amy. And remember, she's not even angry. As in, oh, come on. I spent so much time setting this up. Please. She'll just say, don't worry about it. I'm on the case.
What about if you have multiple calendars? Like, I've got a Gmail account and I've got an Outlook at the office.
So we certainly see most people do two things. Connect their business calendar and connect their personal calendar. Some might even connect some sports activity or other activity outside of their personal life and their business life to Amy. And she'll simply transpose, you know, all calendars, you know, on top of each other and have one holistic view of, if I can, I should try not to book on top of that Friday activity you have with the family, even though you indicated that you're free, but obviously it's in your calendar. And if I could arrange accordingly and just assure that that might be free, you would be a little bit better off. You didn't make it free, as in, I am actually at work, so I will do meetings. But if you can, you know, try to schedule around it, right? So she can actually work with multiple calendars. I'll give you a couple of tricks here. So the way I work my personal calendar is that any dialogue which I start on my business email tends to be something I want in my business calendar. Any dialogue which I start on my personal email tends to be with my friends and what have you. And I actually want that in my personal calendar. I actually don't really want that injected into my business calendar. So she actually figures that out, that if you speak to friends, I'll put it in your personal calendar. If you speak to your colleagues, I'll put it in your business calendar. But I'm aware of both.
Yeah, Amy has a full calendar.
Exactly, yes.
All of your
she actually holds kind of a calendar which you don't see of all, not only all the calendars, but of all her promises. So she might be working on 7 meetings for you. So in those 7, if I made 3 promises in each, that means I've got 21-something promises floating around in your calendar, which I also need to kind of memorize. And this is where a machine-driven PA just becomes so much more powerful, because memorizing 21 things is not really an issue for a machine.
Why did you give it a name? On your website, there's a lovely example of how it works. There's a photo of a person on the phone, and then there's a photo of another person, and it's back and forth.
Yeah. It's a very good question, and we've thought long and hard about whether we go to market with this very machine/AI-driven profile or a very human profile. And in that initial set of tests, what we noticed was that if we have this being an it, people slowly move towards this idea of it being a machine having a syntax, and they don't speak to her in the way we would like you to speak to her. And when you speak to a machine, that syntax becomes something either you make up or you want me to tell you. So what is the syntax? And I don't want her to have a syntax. I want you to have pain, which I can help you solve. And for pain, there is no syntax. There's just the annoyance of 7 emails in my inbox. Amy, please help me out. So that is certainly one reason. And we'll be very afraid of going to market, because we think this is not a product that only executives should have access to. We think if we can do this from a machine point of view, we can democratize the idea of a personal assistant. And that means a junior product manager at Yelp should have her own PA. But if that is the case, she might not really be technical. She's not supposed to learn anything. There shouldn't be 2 pages. You should just be able to hold a human conversation. And if you're 22, you probably figured that out by now. And that's the reason. And that means everything we've done is something where we try to humanize it, whether that be in our responses, in her name, in the profile on the website, in anything which we do. It's about how do we make her more human. Not to trick people, by the way. We're actually very upfront and honest about this is AI, but we're trying to humanize it.
What about the scenario like you and I are in? I've got an account with Amy. You have an account with Amy.
Yep.
If we want to set up a meeting, we've got 2 Amys.
Yep. So we have, that's what we call scheduling nirvana. And that is what we hope for in that point in time where we won. We're successful beyond anybody's imagination, that everybody is using Amy, which is certainly our vision here. And I might just, you know, die trying, but that is certainly our vision here. Because today, without Amy, everything is done in a human-to-human world. Very asynchronous. extremely delayed. Not on purpose, just because when I'm out, you're in. When you're in, I'm out. So the whole thing is just delayed for days, not because we're necessarily lazy, we just got stuff to do, which is not scheduling meetings. So that is super delayed. We then introduce a machine into it. So at least we've moved from human-human to a machine-human world. That means Amy, don't sleep. It's okay sending a reminder at 3 a.m. because she's up, and that's cool. But you're right, that fantasy of me sending you an email saying, hey, how about we meet up at some point next week? You reply back saying, ah, Dennis, I'm suddenly up for that. I see Cecil and Amy, so you can help work it out on my calendar. My immediate response could have been one of, oh, good, I'll get Emily on my side to figure it out with Amy. But what if Emily is indeed Amy? It's just two different names for the same machine. Who the hell is she talking to? She's talking to herself. And that means I go from this kind of asynchronous setup to an almost near instant setup, where I've said, okay, sure, I'll get Emily to speak to Amy. I CC'd her in. As I click send, they already talked. They don't need a day and a half. They need 100 milliseconds. And they've chatted already. And that becomes actually really interesting. Actually so interesting, and I don't want to add confusion to it, but if we want to go a little bit kind of off to the left here, in that near instant world, the paradigm of scheduling could change, right? So today we live in a world where my calendar, for the most part, is fixed. It's static. Next Thursday at 2 is just that. Next Thursday at 2. But if I live in a near instant world where everything is scheduled, free of charge, why are things static? Try to just, you know, free your mind for a second and think of a calendar which is elastic. That is a paradigm shift where the thing that really matters is that you and I agree to meet up. Thursday or Friday, one or the other day, might actually not be better or worse. What's really valuable is that you and I, A, agree to meet, and B, that we do meet. If those are the value points, and my calendar now is elastic, perhaps nothing is set in time until the very end. That could mean that I have 3 potential meetings in Midtown for which I know we agreed I will book them. And they're all Amy users, but I'll keep them floating just for a little while because I might be able to, under the right circumstances, to put a meeting in Midtown for Dennis at 1, 2, and 3. I actually just earned Dennis an hour because had he been able to do this over 3 different days, that would have cost me an hour and a half and back and forth on the subway. She just magically, she kept a floating calendar to set things up on the right day at the right time. And that, I think, becomes, that's just mind-blowing to me, that what used to be so static, cemented in time, next Thursday at 2, becomes elastic. And we'll just meet up at some point in the future, and Amy will make sure that we cement it when we need to cement it, but not before. That is, for me, just almost romantic.
If we go back, though, just to a more simple scenario where, let's say I'm an individual, I'm using Amy, and I'm trying to schedule a meeting with somebody, or let's say the 2 scenarios where I'm scheduling an interview, sorry, a meeting with somebody who's not using Amy and one who is using Amy.
Yep.
Could it become that I'm getting responses too quickly, that I'm used to sending an email to Tom, Tom will reply 2 hours later, I'll go, oh yeah, that suits me, that doesn't suit me. Whereas now it could be bang, bang, response, reply, and now I'm on my computer the whole time scheduling meetings, or rather not scheduling them, excuse me, having to accept them, deny them, yep, try to rearrange them.
So I think there's, we can try to play out 2 scenarios here. So I certainly need to agree with you to some extent, because I just said we're trying to humanize her. No human writes up a full paragraph in 2 seconds.
And sends it and has a meeting scheduled, especially in a scenario where there's 2 Amys.
That is not human. So we might have, and we're actually very open to the idea of building in human delays or human-like delays into the system simply because the outcome or whatever success metrics that we look at, that could be amount of emails, time to schedule, net promoter score, guest happiness, whatever I want to measure, it might just be better if I delay things a little bit. As in, oh, yeah, 2 minutes seems really like a much nicer setting than the 1 second reply. Even though you and I as engineers can say, that's kind of silly to have a wait in any application. But it might not be silly. So that's certainly, you know, the one part, right? Where we want to have some delays in there. And I can certainly understand that part. I do also think that there's the other scenario where most meetings today, which is why we operate in that channel, is done over email. Email, we've all agreed, certainly to some degree, is an asynchronous channel. I send something and I cannot expect you to reply back instantly. I can expect you to arrive in your inbox and upon your own time, you reply back to me. But we've seen other communication forms, certainly of late, really take form. So messaging in any capacity is massive. Massive to the extent that you and I might just be dinosaurs in the way we use email compared to our kids and how they use messaging. If I reply back just so fast that I can start to emulate a messaging setting over email, perhaps I could shorten the whole kind of dialogue because I know you're online. You just emailed Amy, right? So I know you're here. So how about I reply back so quick that I remove the kind of asynchronous part of it and turn it more into kind of a messaging type setting? Heck, I might even have the profile for you, and instead of going back over email, I could quickly just message you and say, hey, if you are online, we can nail this down right now. And that could be a positive setting as well. I'm not saying this is what we do right now. We operate purely within this asynchronous, relaxed email world of I send you an email, and on your own time, you reply back to Amy, and she'll be very happy in waiting a day. But I do think we need to kind of figure out how the world want us to kind of communicate with it. And I'm certainly both up for delays, but I also see advantages of that kind of messaging fantasy that I just described.
It seems like you have to build in a lot of psychology into this process of understanding people, how they think, how they're willing to interact with systems.
Very much so. I don't think we can use a word like human without truly thinking through what does that mean. Human just doesn't mean a perfect sentence or a good paragraph. Human means so many more things than just that. And that is, as you just described, common courtesy, kindness, delays, willingness to reschedule without being bitter. But some of these comes very easy to a computer. Some of these comes very hard for a computer to the point of almost impossible. And we need to create proxies for that. I do think that we'll be able to pick up on moods, stress, and other items in the response from the guests so that we can accommodate that into our responses.
You keep referring to Amy as a her and a she.
Yes.
When I'm talking about Amy with friends of mine, I refer to it as an it, to the best of my abilities. I occasionally yes. let a she or a her slip in. But you see this as a key part that people treat it as a human.
We believe in it so much so that I don't think you've heard me slip even once in the last half hour.
No, we've mentioned machine a couple of times, but it's always been Amy, tell her.
Yes.
She will not be insulted. She won't be upset. She's awake at 3 a.m.
And that's how we think about her. And I think if nothing else, that keeps us very tuned in to our goal of building this very human thing and for us to be successful in achieving that goal. If we start saying it, it becomes quickly very robotic. Is the template okay? Did we send out at the rate that we're supposed to? That is not where I want our thoughts to be. I want us to think of, was this a human response? Did he not just say that he was sick? And then I stressed for us to do the meeting half an hour later? Are you not paying attention, Amy? He's not feeling well. This needs to be next week. And as long as you kind of stick to that, I think there's a lot of, and we even banned that word around the office. I was just about to say it here, and it almost hurts that I was about to say it, because we don't say it. We don't use a word like feature. So any software company, in any documentation around the office, in any dialogue which you have, you talk about features. Can we do that? Can we do this? It's one of the features which we support. We don't support this just yet, and so on and so forth. We never use that word. We talk about skills. Did she learn that just yet? And if you start talking about skills, the ability to learn, having trained her enough, not being fully educated, being well educated in this, that again generates a different environment and a different attitude towards what is it that we're supposed to put in place here. We might sound crazy when I say it out loud here, but that is how we talk around the office.
A few months ago, I interviewed a user experience designer, and he was talking about the invisible interface. And it seems that you've almost achieved that, or maybe you have, because at one point I was attempting to do something, and I wrote to a person who works at X3AI asking how to do it, and I was told, just tell Amy, and Amy will take care of it. Is the invisible interface something you think you have achieved?
I certainly think that we've taken not just half a step, but multiple good steps into what a future invisible interface will look like. It is one where, again, you and I think of, because that's what we've grown up with, a control panel, a set of preferences, a login, a password, any number of items that we've known for applications over the last, you know, decade and a half. That's just a natural thing to do. But you know what? It is not natural. It's just natural because we've been forced to think like that. I think it's time to start to remove that. There is no control panel. I told you not to do this, Amy. That's a setting. And it hurts me just even to use the word setting here. But didn't we just agree that you wouldn't set up meetings for me late at Friday night? I don't want some dude to go into some web interface, flip around in some set of sliders and checkboxes and radio buttons and what have you. Just tell Amy, you know what? I don't really like meetings late on Fridays. Because that's really what the issue is. That shouldn't take 17 clicks. That should take 1 cent. And I'm certainly not saying that we've reached the end and we solved it and now we're here and that's that. I do think, though, that there's us and a plethora of other companies who are trying to do this. And I think we'll see a massive amount of companies continue down this path.
I've been using it for a few months and it's been doing an incredible job for me. The only time I've had trouble with it was when other people didn't want to interact with it. I had one person who responded, I think, to me and Amy saying, oh, I'm going to start getting spam now. But then Amy understood that and wrote to me saying, well, I think this person is going to block me from now on. And another time I was trying to arrange a meeting with four friends for dinner. The previous time I had arranged it, it took something like 21 or 22 emails. And I said, no way, never again. I'm losing Amy on this job. But at least one person has said that their calendar is full for the whole rest of the year. And I'm thinking that it's more annoyance than anything.
So there's certainly a social acceptance towards personal assistants. So there's just short of 2 million people employed in assistant-like roles in the US. They're not employed in positions for which they can't do their job. They're in good positions for where they add a lot of value to whoever executives they work for. It's just that we've been in a period for where this was not something you got at 22 or at 30. This is something you got when you reached that SVP status at Time Inc. for 20 years and your network had reached a certain level as well and they've touched other personal assistants and they accept the fact that you might be busy and appreciate the fact that you have your PA working this on our behalf. But now, if we truly democratize the idea of everybody could really get access to their own PA, we might have to, if not educate the market, but then certainly help younger people pick up best practices for how do you use a personal assistant? Or what happens if one of my friends actually do have a PA all of a sudden? But then again, I'm actually not too afraid of this. I think we've seen this with new technology over and over again, where at least initially, there's some sort of stigma. Remember the first time you called a friend from the supermarket, you just felt a little bit like an asshole. And perhaps you were. But today, heck, if we go to Whole Foods, half of the people didn't bring a list. Have to call home. Did you say tomatoes? Oh, yes you did. And there is no stigma. Heck, they'll even have the little Bluetooth things where, at least 2 years ago, I thought still, come on, oh, put that in your pocket. But today, fair enough, you just walk around with it. And I think there might be a period for which there could be a little bit of a stigma, but then they'll just disappear. Because enough people will have this, and it'll become kind of odd as in, so, are you setting this up yourself? Why would you do that? That seems silly. Just like, why would you handwrite me a letter suggesting that we meet up for dinner, mail it with the US Postal Service, and I receive it 2 days later, and then you ask me to write you a letter back? It's kind of like, dude, that's not happening. I'm going to shoot you an email or a text or call you. I'm not writing you any letters. And I think this will be the same. But we're certainly in this kind of in-between period. And I think it's a huge challenge. So I'm not neglecting the fact that there's a huge task here. But I think time, if I do nothing, will solve this for me.
Working or using Amy, its ability to use language seems incredible. It is, for all purposes, I can't distinguish it from a person. Do you think that in a way that is dehumanizing in a sense? That a computer can reach that point?
It's a very good question. And I'm not sure I have the answer just yet. Which is perhaps not the right thing to say. I would like to believe, which might not be the case, that if you think about it, isn't it even more dehumanizing that I force a human with all his capacity to go into some sort of control panel with a little kind of mouse thing and slide back and forth on some sliders and buttons and drop down boxes and radio things? That seems dehumanizing. That seems, take, you know, all the ingenuity of a human and just pull that down to a level which is really one step removed from retarded, right? Because the machine can't really do anything else. Perhaps it's the opposite, that me being able to speak to it is just even more human. Perhaps I am more human after having talked to Amy than I were before. I just don't know. And I'm actually not sure. I'm not sure that there's any other argument for the control panel or the preference page or the web interface or the click 8 buttons on your app is more human. It's just so far removed from human that you feel not threatened by it. So, sorry, you helped me find the answer here.
So why is now a good time for X.AI? Or for Amy, let's say.
We've had this pain, I think, at least since the very first days of us getting a set of emails to today. I can't even remember me having set up meetings since I got that first email in any different way to what I do today. Email ping pong. Sure, I've done calls, I've done it, you know, in person, I've done a number of other things, but the majority of the meetings which I've set, and by the way, I counted them, I did 1,019 in 2012. I had 672 reschedules. So don't tell me I don't know anything about it. I've done a massive amount of meetings.
And you didn't have a personal assistant?
I did all that by hand. That's probably why we're doing this, because I took a punch to the face for a year straight. But in that setting, there might have been so much pain accumulated and so many people trying to solve it, but in so many odd ways that now might be the time, because NLP and the whole ability for machines to understand language have reached a point where, at least within a limited vocabulary, you might be able to achieve 100% accuracy. So we're not there yet for where you and I can put Amy to the Turing test and she'll pass. Because she won't. She will do an awesome job of scheduling a meeting, though. And what you haven't noticed is she'll always try to bring you back to the path that she's on. So you're not having long, intimate chats with Amy on you and your relationship and, you know what, I'm not sure whether we should have a second kid or this and that. That is not Amy's job. And there is no Scarlett Johansson in there that'll do that job for her. She'll schedule the hell out of a meeting, though. So within this kind of very semi-limited vocabulary, she does really well. And I think that's why the time is now, that NLP reached an inflection point, but in that sense, it reached the point where you can understand so many things, but not everything, but so many things that if you choose a specific subject matter, you might be able to get to the end of it. And I think that was the bet we took here, that we're going to jump into the pool, and it is indeed a pool, not an ocean. And that's why you'll see the Siris, the Google Nows, the Cortanas sometimes stumble a little bit, because you're supposed to be able to ask them anything, and it's just so unfair, because they're fantastic systems, but there is no Oracle just yet. You know, Skynet is not there.
You've chosen not to build any app or anything like that. That was a deliberate decision, I assume.
It's either brave, intelligent, and all those good things, or stupid and not wise. I just, again, believe if I say the word human, I cannot surrender halfway there and build an app for which that does not look like a human. That looks like an app. Yes, it does, because it is. So I want her to be in a space where she can only be human. I might not, you know, be smart enough to solve it together with my team, but I want her to be in a space where there is no other option for her to be human. So that's the space that we're going to operate in, and we're not going to surrender on that.
But being in an app store has traditionally been a great advertising path, so you have to choose some other way of becoming known.
I'll give you one idea that we've had of getting that exposure. So there's certainly the idea of how do I go to market? How do I ensure that I reach the growth targets that we've set? Perhaps there is an app. Perhaps it's just an app which sends me your location. That's all I need. Perhaps it's just an app so Amy knows where you're at. So that when you're running a little bit late for a meeting, don't even email Amy. She knows. She also knows that you're on your way there. She'll then kindly send the guest a quick email saying, hey, he's running a little bit late. My apologies. He should be there shortly. Now, that's a nice app. But it's not an app that removes us from that vision of making her extremely human. It's just an app where instead of you calling into Amy saying that, hey, please let him know I'm going to be a little bit late. No, she knows. I'm tuned into where you're at, where you're headed, that you will be a little bit late.
You said that personal assistants are something that the quite high up in a company has, and you want to democratize this. But so who do you see as the audience?
87 million U.S. knowledge workers. People who come into work at some point today, tomorrow, Monday, touch a computer in some capacity. Every single one of them will have an email and a calendar. They'll do a meeting. But engineers like yourself will say, but hey, Dennis, I don't do meetings. Bullshit. If I go into your calendar, there'll be a scrum meeting, there'll be an on all hands, there'll be a roadmap thing, there'll be a we need to talk about this. You might not call the meetings. They're on your calendar though. And if not on the calendar, they're on two sticky notes or on somebody else's calendar. You just didn't want to add them. So there's things which have been booked in time, and I want to serve all of them. I want this to be democratized to the extent that it would seem almost silly to say that, hey, we're Google. We have, I don't know, 2,500 employees in New York. But there's a lot of the engineers for which they don't really do much on their calendar, so we're not going to give them a calendar app. Of course you are. It's either free or near free, so everybody gets an email, a calendar, a desk, a MacBook Air, a key card to the building. There's a set of basic stuff that you get when you walk in the door. I want to be part of that package. I want it to be so silly that, am I paying engineers $120K a year to sit and set up their own meetings? I think not. So everybody, together with that key card, laptop, that chair, that desk, that monitor, you get a PA. That's who? 87 million.
So then the companies, the main target is companies as opposed to private individuals?
So that's a good question. So how do I want to go to market? Our going to market will initially be bottom way up. So I want you to use it. Then I want you to use it so much that your colleague becomes envious. He starts to use it. Then you two use it together. That becomes even more sexy. A third guy uses it. And someday the CIO figures out, hey, what the hell? What is this thing that you reimburse every month for $5? And you say, it's kind of how I set up my meetings, because I hate doing it myself, but I've just been, you know, reimbursing it. Oh, that's kind of nifty. We should kind of get a corporate license for that. Sure. And I'll then go sell him the 140-seat license to that. So that is the kind of going-to-market strategy for it.
So when are you going to go to market with Amy?
Good question. So today we're in close beta. Not so close that you couldn't persuade me to add your friend, and a friend of a friend. So we add people all the time. But it's still a closed beta, for which we're still training on the data that comes in. And we are far from finished. This is not a weekend hackathon. This is not a 3 months Y Combinator thing. This is a hard problem to solve. And we have a lot of work to do. I would think something in the early days of 2015, we would be able to open up more widely. And there'll certainly be a day where everybody would be able to go sign up and instantly use it, try it out, book their first whatever X meetings that might be, and hopefully fall in love with it. It's not today though, but people should be highly encouraged to go sign up for the wait list, and we simply pick people from that wait list every single day.
How many are you currently using, Amy?
In the thousands.
And then that's thousands of meetings every day? Or are you in the tens
Even
of thousands
more.
Potentially?
So in the tens of thousands of meetings. Just because one person, heck, you can take the number I told you before. I'm one guy. I did 1,019 in 2012.
You're a busy guy.
But I'm probably a busy guy. Others might just do, heck, 5 meetings a month. But then at least that's a 5x, right? So find a number in between. So we have people who do hundreds of meetings a month. We have people who do 2. And that's okay, because it's supposed to be a machine for which, a real human assistant at 45K for 2 meetings? That seems kind of silly, right? But for $5? Hey, whatever. The company pays for it anyway. So I use it when I use it, and when I don't, I don't. Just like when you go on summer holiday, you probably don't terminate your Netflix subscription. You just keep it alive, right? You pay your $7.95 and you're cool with it. I want this price to be the same, where she's there when I need her. I might not use her all the time.
So on your back end, how does Amy work?
I think most people would have this idea that if you haven't solved the problem in full, it is a binary setting where if the machine can solve it, the machine will solve it in full. If it cannot, a monkey takes over and will solve it for you. That is just not the case. It's far from it, actually. What is really happening here is, if I receive something for which the machine does not yet understand it, I need to annotate the hell out of that data set, so come tomorrow, I'm a little bit wiser. And there's certain data sets which we annotate for. There is certainly temporal data, date, time, so on and so forth, which is extremely important. So I need to understand that when you say tomorrow, or dinner, or later this afternoon, or 2 o'clock, or any other temporal data point, that I can pick up on that. You might just, heck, for all I know, say Thursday in a funny way in Boston. If that is the case, I need to learn that. So that is how something can be marked as an edge case, and it will be put aside for training. Then there'll be a set of AI trainers who go in and train the machine on this new specific piece of data. She won't learn on one piece of data. She needs to learn on multiple similar settings. But here's one. Perhaps later today I'll see another one. And at a point, I would have learned something. And time, then there's people. I need to be able to have an understanding of people again. You might say, hey, could you add Michael to the meeting on Thursday? Who's Michael? I need to figure out who he is, how to add him, where does he belong in this? Do I need to check the times with him? Then locations. You say, let's meet up at Starbucks. Which one? We have 200 on Manhattan alone. So that doesn't help me much, but I need an understanding of it. You might have a Starbucks. You guys actually might have met at a Starbucks earlier. So you can go back in the past and see, oh, that's the Starbucks you speak of when you speak of Starbucks.
I've had Amy ask me, what's your preference for a lunch? What's your preference for a thing?
She would like to know exactly where you like to meet so she doesn't forget who she's there to serve, which is you and not the guest. She should certainly provide delight to the guest, but she's there to serve you. So we need to be able to spot cases for which we do not yet understand, annotate the hell out of that data, whether that be time, date, people, locations, constraints. That is probably even harder, which is, let's set something up next week. That is you telling me that we're not doing this week. But when you say next week, is that a soft or hard constraint? Next week might actually just mean not this week, but any week thereafter. It might not mean it must be next week. Could be if you're traveling, because I'm only in New York next week, and that's that. So we need to truly annotate that. And then once annotated, it goes back into the machine. We'll see, you know, whether we're a little bit wiser and, you know, whether the intent, the constraints, the dates, the times, if they spit out some reasonable result.
And is all that done automatically, or is there somebody watching this?
Right now, and that's a very good question, every single case is being checked by a human. Why? If you think about it just for a second here, what is the truth? The truth is what I tell Amy it is. So that means what I tell Amy is the truth, I can never be any better than that. But if my truth is not 100% accurate, then she'll never be better. Then she believes 90% accurate is where she's supposed to be. Not cool. So I need to make sure that if something was not annotated correctly, that that doesn't infiltrate the system and becomes a slight variance on the truth. Not cool. So we are very anal on the data which we put into the system.
But truth can be quite cultural too.
This is hard. That is why I use a word like truth, because it's not either accurate or inaccurate. It's a very hard thing. And there might even be a setting for which we live in a 99.9% world, because no human would ever be able to figure out the ambiguity in this sentence here. It can be read in two different ways.
Yeah, you're into philosophy to a large extent as well. And then cultural backgrounds, even within a country.
Yes.
A different region or a person from a different nationality may have a different perspective, and you want... But is that something you're aiming for, and aiming to be able to understand that I'm Irish, I mean something slightly different than a native Bostonian means?
Yes, so...
But you as a person watching the machine need to understand what that Irish person means as opposed to what that American means.
So there's two settings. There's a setting for where I train the machine, which we do today in basic US English and US culture, with even you being able to very quickly dispute the fact that, but that's 140 different things. But we found some middle road. We want to be able to have the machine train the machine, so that I could figure out whether that be moods, ways to speak to you. Am I casual, formal, something in between? When you say this, you really mean something else. We haven't talked about, you know, super hard cases like irony. You tell me, yeah, sure, let's celebrate at Burger King. Does that mean we are we celebrating at Burger King or not? So forget about those. But you're absolutely right. This is something we should want to train on. We're trying right now just to solve the first problem. Just hold it. Very kind, polite, middle-of-the-road conversation with a human being.
If we turn to your architecture, can you describe that in detail, in little detail, please?
So just a few pointers here. We run everything off of the Amazon cloud. Heck, we got married to them years back, and I think we'll never move. Been super happy with it. They've been very supportive. And this time, compared to some of our past ventures, we're not in a world of traditional web scale for where you need 300 instances to take in the volume, to present this data back and do it all in real time and this and that. We kind of live in this asynchronous world for where, heck, a minute delay, we just talked about it earlier, might be something we say, build into the system on purpose and buy myself another minute to compute whatever I want to compute. So we're not really having scale, traditional scale challenges that you would think of. Ah, how do I take this Mongo and, you know, shard it to, you know, this X number of instances? We're not living in that world. So we're certainly on Amazon in the backend. We use Mongo to store our data. We've engineered all the backend in Scala. We've done all the frontend. When I say frontend, just so we're all in agreement here, there is no frontend.
No, the interface.
It's our data, internal data annotation interface for our AI trainers. That is Node, Angular, JavaScript kind of frontend that we build on that.
But on scalability, just go back to that. You are at only a few thousand users right now, but if as your goal is 87 million people,
yep,
you will have to have significant scale.
Yes, but even as you say 87 million people, take our last company,
Visual Revenue.
CNN was one of our customers. They have 100 million uniques. That was one customer. Then there's the Boston Globe, Le Monde, The Guardian, Fox News, and 172 others. It's just a completely different type of scale. Mm-hmm. Here, even as that number is large, and if I got every single person in the US, which I want, it's solvable. I'm not saying it's tiny. I'm just saying it's solvable, and we solved scale above and beyond that before. So we feel very comfortable in this space because even at the most optimistic success point, kind of from a scale point of view, it'll be small.
As you're still talking, let's say 87 million people by 5 meetings a day, by 4 emails per meeting, it's not, as you say, as big as hundreds of millions per hour or anything like that.
Exactly. And most of the modeling needs not to be done in real time. That is perhaps even something which we can do in batch. I take in data, we, you know, remodel at night, per the hour, per the whatever. So, again, we feel very comfortable. It's a huge challenge on the science side, but on the scale side, we have certainly the right team in place to solve this. So we're in good shape on that part.
You're gathering a massive amount of data about people. And also, it's not just the simple, Tom is my friend, I'm meeting him at the place, you know, locations. But you want people to treat Amy as a person, so their guard will be down and they'll be speaking to it in a way. And you've said already that it can pick up moods and stresses. That's a lot of information that other systems don't have.
Yes, there's certainly one advantage which we have here compared to, say, a social network or something similar, which is that our business model is not different to the product which you use. We are in the business of scheduling meetings. Not selling ads, not selling data, not any third item you could come up with. We're really just in the business of scheduling meetings. That means the data which I collect for you, I collect for you
to help you schedule your meetings. And we can have extremely strict data policies in place that ensure that the data is not mine, but yours. Because there is no alternative business model where I kind of need that data because I need to resell it at a later point in time. No, I just want to schedule your meeting. That's the one part. It's your data, not mine. And I can say that because I don't need it for any other purpose. Two, once I've seen it and I trained on it and I teased out whatever value from it, I don't really need to go back in the past and see, so who did you meet with in that sense? So I can choose to discard a lot of traditional data and keep the metadata off of that, you know, once I teased out the value. So I feel comfortable in not sitting on an archive of a 3-4 year history on who you spoke to, when, where, and the dialogue and all of that. I can allow myself to discard that without the system becoming any dumber.
So where do you draw a line? Because, you know, if I met Tom for dinner 2 months ago,
yep,
and I'll tell Amy, I want to meet him again, same time, same place. Suddenly it's very valuable to have that history.
Yes, and we need to figure out where do we draw those lines. We're not so far yet that we know exactly where to draw them. We just feel comfortable in knowing that it is your data, and perhaps you tell me. Perhaps you tell Amy that
it'll be a configuration invisible.
In the same
again.
Way that you tell your browser, don't remember the password. You tell Amy, don't remember who I meet up with. The last few weeks, that is all good and fine, but I'd rather you forget. Okay, then she'll forget. With that comes obviously, oh, you need to tell me, so where did you meet?
Retraining.
Because I don't know, I forgot, because you told me to.
I remember that you told me to forget.
Yes.
Where is the future then for your company?
I think this problem is so large that those 10 obvious things that you and I could go to the whiteboard right now and agree, they would just fit so well with Amy. I try not to think about it. I just really want to nail this. I want to go so deep that it becomes obvious that we're the best at scheduling meetings.
But I mean,
no
as
more,
it is,
no less.
I can't find a problem with it.
We're very happy to hear, but we're still working on it.
Of course.
So when you see delays, that is training which I'm still doing. And I would like to get to a point where I do less and less, to the point of no training. She's now learned. And what you're talking about is, once she learned that, so what's next? It's a very good question. I just think there's so many obvious things that I'd rather not even say here, but you can very easily think about, what can she do when you just set up a meeting in Miami? So how the hell did you get to Miami? Where are you staying? Which car are you taking from the airport? There's many things which she could help you with now that you got this good personal relationship with Amy.
So it would be like, Amy, set up a meeting. Please get me a flight. Please book me a hotel. I'd like to have a car.
That is very easy to say. And that is exactly the interface which you want, right?
And again, it's just a matter of having systems with open APIs that you can communicate with.
Yes.
And once it's there and Amy understands, would you see Amy having to confirm those things? Because now you're talking money, which is slightly different than a meeting. There can be a misunderstanding with a meeting. No big deal. But now a $300, $400 flight, a couple hundred dollars in a car.
It depends. So we all have thresholds. So you can go down now and buy me a Diet Coke. Whether it's $1 or $2, I don't care. That's my threshold for being casual about money. That's okay. That's probably a threshold for you being casual about flights as well, where you won't die if the ticket to Miami is $320 versus $280. You would rather it had been $280, but it's not the end of the world. So I think it might just be a set of personal preferences for, this is what I allow Amy to do, this is what I allow her not to do. You need to seek my confirmation. I'd just say, sure, that's okay. Go with that one. Don't give me a set of search results. Just say, I couldn't do the $300 to Miami, but I can do the $320. Are you okay with it? Sure. But again, I try not to think about it. I'm in the business of scheduling meetings.
So what about non-English, other countries, big markets?
So we make the assumption that, and have set up the system so that we can train on a new language. And that's all good and fine. And I think we do need to train on a new language, not just the vocabulary as an insert, but train on that new language. That's the one part. We'll figure that. That's simply just about running through enough meetings for us to be able to train on that. But there's the other part, which is there could be a set of social norms that are just different in Germany that you and I just don't know about. So whatever social norms that Amy grew up with, they might not be usable in Germany. So we need to figure out, how do we bring Amy to Germany and have her baptized as a young girl there so she can learn exactly what is acceptable and not.
What about a voice interface?
Again, we've disconnected the input from the function itself. So right now, we take the input as plain text is in an email. But you and I, again, could quickly imagine, okay, so text could really, if you support that, that's really just a protocol. Then you can take that from anywhere, right? You could Facebook it to me. You could text it to me. You could Snapchat it to me. You could do anything where I just get the text. That's really just engineering, even limited engineering.
Yeah.
So we would certainly do that in the future. We picked email because that is where, for the most part, people arrange meetings and do their ping pong today. But we are very eager to kind of expand into other channels. Once we figure out whether that next channel is a text-compatible one, if it isn't, and it might be a voice-enabled one, then voice is really just a step removed from text. Then I need to be able to translate voice into text. Heck, I might not even do that myself. That might be something which I go acquire somewhere else, and I have that translation. And I'm back to where I'm at today. Now I have the text, and here we go. But there could be things where then I need to go back, right? So now I have the output text. Amy needs to kind of talk back to you. That could put, you know, different kind of stresses on the system, including the kind of scale stressor that you and I talked about before, where my current world is asynchronous and a voice world tends to be not that. If you asked Amy a question, I'd like her to respond.
Respond quickly.
Yes.
But also it might respond in a while when you're not ready for a response.
Yes. Yes. So I feel comfortable, excited even, on new channels and new input methodologies. But one thing at a time. Email it is.
Dennis, thank you very much for taking time with me today. Any final notes?
My pleasure. If any final notes, this is a challenge so huge that if there's any engineer, data scientist, data engineer out there listening, now's the time. x.ai/jobs. We are eager to hire smart people for our office here in New York.
In one office or other locations?
Everything out of Manhattan, New York. One day, perhaps, we'll expand. But if you want to bring anything new to life, you're going to be at the same whiteboard.
True. Dennis Mortensen, thank you very much for your time.
Cheers.
The opening music, as always, is The Return by Nisi23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was Artificial Being by Mean Moon from the album Explorers 2.